Welcome to In the Deep. I'm your host, Catherine Ingram. The following Zoom session of Dharma Dialogues took place on March 17th, 2024. It's called The Truth Will Set You Free, from the famous line spoken by Jesus. As you would have seen from my note that I sent out, I'm back here in America to be with my very, very ill brother. And I find myself here at the beginning of springtime in Virginia, the area in which I grew up, and the buds are coming. The blossoms are happening on some of the trees. There's a scent of spring in the air. There's a blossoming and a dying happening here at the same time. As always, it's always blossoming and dying. And it's been powerful to experience this aliveness in the face of death. It feels that it is even more alive. The contrast between life and death, between the living and not, is the single greatest contrast that I can think of. Even when someone's faded out quite a bit, but not dead, we all maybe have seen a situation where someone was maybe in a coma or had been very, very ill and was barely conscious in the last phase. There's a difference the moment that they're gone. Right? It's the biggest mystery and difference that there is. And so I'm very, very aware of that. I'm very aware of that these days and feeling into the preciousness of the moments that are left. At the same time, in this beautiful springtime of Virginia, which has a very unusually beautiful spring, I have to ask myself every day how I would want to be in this phase, because I want to. It's often a question I ask when I want to feel into an empathy for someone. Of course, I ask myself, how would I like that in a kind of Jesus way, do unto others as you would have them do unto you? But it doesn't necessarily always apply, actually, to other people. Like how I would like to be in conversation or to be helped in the end is actually quite different than my brother. His way is different. And I'm having to see that the most compassionate thing, the most truly unconditional love, is to just let him have it his way entirely. And my wish for him, of course, would be to move along into acceptance or some kind of letting go. But that's not how it is. And it's for me, I have to come back to, can I really be here and love him unconditionally and let him be as he is with no agenda of my own to have it be more free or more easy for him? Because I feel like my efforts to try to go in that direction are agitating for him. And it's not that I'm trying to talk to him about Dharma things. I'm just trying to talk to him about making choices for his own well-being, his own comfort, and to not have this very bad disease turn into the absolute worst possible next phase. But I keep surrendering to the reality of the situation. And I say this as an offering for those who haven't yet had to go through this with a very dear loved one, to encourage you to not get too frustrated and to realize that people are going to die the way they lived for the most part. You know, and you can't expect them to at the end, when they're weak and their minds are clouded, to kind of snap into some realization that they didn't have when they were healthy. So it's in a way, it's a conversation about love, about kindness, about letting go of your own needs, your own hopes, actually, in the situation. Like, what is love? You know, we sometimes feel that certain people are not deserving of our efforts because they're not appreciative or they're behaving badly. And this also is something to look at, in my case, look at with regard to my brother, because, you know, we had a lifetime of being siblings. And it would be unfair for me to judge him or withhold any kind of kindness and love for him just because here at the end, his behavior is difficult. So this is very fresh in my consciousness, as you can imagine. And I always like to speak about things that are kind of current for me. And this is one, but it is one that I think is a universal experience for all of us sooner or later. I happen to know a lot of people on the call, or some people on the call, are going through their own phases of loss and dealing with different types of loss. I just want to acknowledge that.
Hi.
Hi.
It's so good. It's so good to be here with you and to be here last night and to have like hours to take in what happened and how I felt. Because usually, I guess I feel in the moment self-conscious about, and you also talked about that last night, about some people not having the words necessarily. And I always feel like that. I don't have the words. But with what you're going through and just facing the reality of like what's really happening with your brother, I've been just into how I feel when I finally do accept a reality of a situation, bad or good, I get this wonderful sense of peace and calm.
Yes.
And that you're glowing. And, like, I felt that last night, that it was that all that was coming through, like with all you're going through, but you're so, I feel so connected to your peace about it. And it brings me peace about, there's two women that I know right now that are in fourth stage pancreatic cancer. And what you were talking about, how they're in another reality. You know, they're
like another country. Yes,
they're in another country. It totally, and they know each other, and a bunch of people, all of us know these people. And when we're together, it's very powerful how the different planes that I experience, and also their transparency about what's happening. I've never experienced that before, being around people who are sick, but they're also talking about, they're not hiding.
Yes.
They're in their reality, and they're letting it through. And I've been thinking about your being that lighthouse for us during COVID, you know, and just staying with what was happening was just so comforting, as hard as it was. But now I'm experiencing so many of the positive things that came from that, and how grateful, like my life, everyone's lives changed so dramatically. And I think I'm more in touch now with the positives.
Yeah.
That I've gotten, and people around me have gotten, you know, how we're in it, and it's nothing like we thought. Yeah. But it's okay.
Yeah.
Feels okay.
I want to touch to the points you were making. I've always loved, ever since I heard it in the 60s, the phrase, the truth will set you free, which was, you know, on all our hippie posters, the truth will set you free. And And I have found the truth of that so many times.
Yeah.
So many times. And while I think if I were faced with a sudden diagnosis, I would be going through a lot of the, you know, stages of grief, but I don't think I'd be in denial. I think that's one I would be spared, because I love, just give me the truth, even no matter how hard it is. I'll deal with it my own way, right? I don't want to have to dance around and pretend anything to myself or anyone else.
Yeah.
And what you're experiencing in seeing me these two times simply is that I feel very close to the essential truths because of my brother. And, you know, he's my only relative left of my original family. And he was the closest in my age to my age of my siblings. And I just feel ablaze with the intensity of this. At the same time, in this beautiful springtime where I walk out and it's kind of a little bit heavenly, people are kind of happy and all of that happening. So there is a way in which it's like a mini retreat each morning for me, you know, every day, this powerful recognition.
Yeah, the gratitude, that's that word is just surrender and gratitude, you know.
Yes, there you go. You can get a long way on just that.
That's it, right?
Yeah, really. Even if you forget everything else.
I love it. This is just great. It's so great to see you.
So great to see you.
Thank you.
Hi. Oh, it's good to see you, Kat.
Good to see you, sweetie.
Yeah. Yeah, I relate a lot to this topic. It's a gorgeous, just exquisite day in the Pacific Northwest here, too. We've had our first string of sunny 70-degree days, and it just feels like this luminous heavenly shedding of winter and this kind of joyful exuberance into the season of rebirth. And I was out in my garden yesterday weeding a lot and just digging, you know. I feel so much comfort in the rhythms and the cycles of nature. And this very practical act of putting my fingers into the ground and digging up last year's debris or the weeds that have grown over these months of kind of untended time. And my heart has been really heavy. I've been going through a break. I mean, it's months now of going through the pangs of loss related to this breakup. And I wish it would just be done with faster and sooner. It really feels like, okay, it's time now, spring. It's time to.
It's my time. When do I get paroled?
Exactly. Why is this still occupying my consciousness? But I found just the practical act of digging in the ground and taking out what's not meant to live this season. It's so helpful. It communicates on this level that even the Dharma can't always get to with me, because it's like I'll have these deep moments of peace and acceptance and reckoning with truth as it is, that this was not a relationship that was meant to last. And yet the busy mind will, as it does, preoccupy on all the things that felt, you know, good or that felt that now feel like a loss or an absence. And then, of course, there's a recentering back into this truth. But the preoccupation, it has got a ghostly quality to it. And as we know, like we can't make our minds not do that. Yeah. So this act of managing the mind by really having my hands in the dirt and feeling this act of pulling away that which is no longer alive or that I no longer want to occupy this productive, fresh, pregnant garden. Right. Really helpful.
That's a great metaphor for you. Really great.
Yeah. But I guess, you know, to frame this in terms of a question, I just, I like saying what you're saying about recognizing the truth and seeing the truth in the ultimate, like the ultimate truth in these situations and bowing or surrendering to that. And I guess what I'm also aware of is like the truth of our loss and the truth of our wishing things could be different. You know, I feel like I can't bypass that one. You know, I can say, ah, so it is. Yes, this too. And this too includes this massive wish that things could be different.
Right. And, but as we spoke about, what I saw in a similar circumstance 30 years ago, I saw that even the wishing was just some unconscious way of keeping the whole thing alive in my mind, which was the only place it was left alive, was just some stories in my mind. So that I found helpful at the time. I don't know if you'll find it helpful, but to understand that there's a psychological component. I agree, one can't help, the heart yearns and wants what it wants, but to understand the psychological subtle motivations sometimes that come along with what seems like a simple wish, there's an undercurrent of going into a delusional story of, if I keep thinking about it, if I wish like Jiminy Cricket, if I wish hard enough, it'll make it so. Or if I don't tell the story somehow in some manner, then the whole thing goes poof, as if, not as if it never existed, but rather as it has no current life. Mm-hmm. So it's just a simple, subtle twist, you know, but I did find that helpful when I finally saw that in my own case.
Yeah. Yeah, I see the power in that, in acknowledging that, because the mind can be so, there's an insidious quality to the way that we can construct things to keep them alive. I think a subtle way that that's manifesting for me right now is this wish for resolution. Not that this is going to work, we should get back together, but things ended in a way that was really challenging.
Yeah.
And I have this illusion, I don't know if it's an illusion or if it's a hope or if there's actual truth in it, that, oh, if we could just, you know, have some reckoning and a heart to heart and like understanding each other's motives, then it would be easier to let go of. But I wonder if that too is just a preoccupation to keep some sense of it alive.
It's a natural desire to hope for resolution. But if it is not to be, right, then you have to, as Jack Kerouac said, accept loss forever. Mm. Some things don't tie up in a bow. I'm facing that with my brother too, you know, exactly that. It would be my preference to be here for him in ways that I feel I'm best able to help, but he has no interest in any of that. So I'm reduced to just, like I said yesterday, buying stuff for him to make his life a little bit more soft and easy, and organizing his medications and his appointments and things like that, all of which is critical, and I'm happy to do it. But what I thought might be the case when I came all the way from Australia is not going to be. I can see that it isn't. And we don't have a lot of window because his brain functioning is being compromised. So I'm looking at that too, saying, okay, it may be that I do have to just accept this loss as well, not just his death, but the connection that I will feel unresolved about, you know, maybe not, maybe I'll feel there was just simply no other way it could go.
One can't dictate the circumstances that other people live their lives by, or the manner that other people live their lives by. And it can feel so hard when it's like we've had these opportunities to witness a life that feels touched by grace, in the way we accept truth and the way we allow our hearts to soften and be tenderized, like all these ways that make for what feels like a really good way to live. Other people are just, no, thank you.
Not interested.
I'd rather stay in delusion, or I'd rather stay in comfort. And it's so hard to accept that. But what it's also bringing in an awareness for me of is the word that keeps coming is like dignity, like the dignity of my life as I've chosen to live it and the values that I've welcomed in and embodied. And like, that's really all that I have in
yes.
You know, it's just a kind of deep bow and the dignity that comes with that to life as it is and my preference and choice for living in this way.
Yes, absolutely. I love that. And also dignity is the one thing that can't be taken from you. Mm. And I would argue it's one of the most beautiful manifestations, right? It's the, one of the most beautiful. Yeah. Keep doing your gardening and seeing that with all of the pulling up of the old weeds, you're making space for the rebirth.
Catherine.
Hello.
So lovely, lovely, lovely to see you and to see everybody here. I feel part of a community, even though I don't know everybody here, but it's lovely. Everything that you say just it means so much to me. I've been through the deaths of a couple of relatives where I've also felt this kind of juxtaposition of the terrible loss and yet the presence as well.
Mm-hmm.
And it's completely nourishing. It sounds the wrong word in that context, but it's better than drowning in the other.
Yes.
And what you're saying about not being able to reach somebody, you know, when they're brain is affected, they're going to be irritable and there's going to be sort of processes going on in the mind that they can't help.
Yeah.
And I've worked a little bit in a hospice a long time ago as a volunteer, and the only thing that you could do really was to bring a cup of tea and a smile and just try and make that moment or that day a little bit better.
Yes.
Than the moment before. Those moments make so much difference.
Definitely, yes.
My father had cancer, and when something nice happened that day, the nurse rang, or somebody brought something, or he went to a day center or something, it was so much comfort.
Mm.
And those little things, yeah, they're just not to be underestimated. But I find myself where there's the end of something and then there's thoughts afterwards that are trying to process it and make sense of it and maybe finish it in a different way or whatever. Since the death of my brother in very traumatic circumstances, I've had psychology intervention, you know, I've had help, and for the most part I'm over it, but I've also find a part of me where things replay, and you know, it's
in your mind or
yeah and it's been happening more since about January, and this is a year and a half ago, so I feel as though I should be going the other way with it. Yeah, and I'm not like it all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I think the minute I see you, I dissolve into tears, you know, because it just, you speak what is true. You don't hide anything. And I have somebody else close to me who's just denying a very serious illness. And yeah, it's all.
You know, back to your thing about playing in the mind, and another way that we tell the story, but we revise the ending.
Yeah.
In a kind of, again, wishful thinking.
Yeah.
And there's an adorable story that you may have heard because someone told me this so long ago, but I've told it in Dharma Dialogues, but I love it. It's a true story. A friend of mine in Los Angeles, she and her husband had a nanny. They could afford a nanny who had been with them from the birth of their child that they had adopted. So now the child is about six, and the nanny, the Irish nanny, is going to go back to Ireland and marry her long-term sweetheart, right? She's going to get married and she's going to go live in Ireland. So my friend is telling her son about the nanny and her wonderful country and how beautiful it is. And she's going to get married and da, da, da. And at the end of the story, she says, and that's why she's going to be moving to Ireland. And she's not going to be living with us anymore. She's going to be living in Ireland. So the story was all great until that point. And her son says, Mommy, I like that story, but could you tell it with a different ending? So we're like that, aren't we? We want to tell the story with a different ending. I mean, we're human. Of course, we are going to have those kinds of impulses. We want to be able to tweak things with a better ending. But of course, when you are in a battle with reality, it's very exhausting. It's maddening to yourself. So in addition to all the rest of the pain that comes with a genuine loss, you're also in a fight. That's why so many times people will describe the moment of relief when you just surrender, like just the relief when you finally, in Buddhism, they have an image of holding a hot coal. And no matter how willful you are, at some point you will let go of the hot coal. You just cannot hold it anymore. And if you're lucky, your psyche is designed in such a way that you don't have much fortitude to hold a hot coal. As soon as you notice it's hot, you let it go. Do you understand?
Yeah.
When a painful, awful situation that you can do nothing about, right, is on the table and you've happened to pick it up, how long do you have to wait before you let it go? So it's possible for many people who immediately see this burns, this is burning, this thought, this strategy, this lie, this compromise, it's burning me. This agenda that's not going to come to be.
Yeah.
Even though you can see it would be better in your view.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Hi, Catherine.
Hi.
Hi. I don't know if I can barge in.
Of course, yes, you can.
I just wanted to say, like Wendy, I'm dissolving into tears myself, so I don't know if I can talk, but I can really relate to your story. It's reminding me of my father's death. And he was a difficult man, and he had a difficult death, and I was extremely close with him. Mm-hmm. And listening to you, I'm reminded it was a wonderful experience, despite the fact that we fought up mm-hmm. until the end at times. We were really close, and I was his closest person. But like what you said, people die as they live. And I realized that as well. He wasn't going to have this amazing turnaround
epiphany
of insight. No, just to share this, my parents had separated when I was very young and they hadn't been in touch in a long time. So while my father was dying, my mother was making an effort getting back in touch. And, you know, this was this incredible thing. But I knew I could see how it would pan out. My father wasn't going to have the amazing insight that he, you know, and admit responsibility. And true enough, it didn't happen. But it was really interesting to be privy, to be a witness to just what you're saying. I could really touch the authenticity that happens in those moments when you're dealing with something so profound. And I could feel, as Wendy was saying, my own dissolving into tears at that authenticity, you know.
Yeah, I was thinking as she was speaking as well about how I've known a number of hospice workers over the years through Dharma dialogues and other ways, and they are usually the clearest people. They are not confused about the right situation here and about what matters. And they've seen it all. They've seen people die in dignity and in love. And they've seen people die fighting every step of the way and in rage. They've seen it all, right? But what's interesting is how in my experience of several people I'm thinking about right now, how clear they are just about what the job is, that you just show up, as one of my friends who was a hospice worker said, you show up as a non-anxious presence, right?
Right.
What's that? It's good.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. And I was actually describing a close friend of mine who died a few years ago. I was discussing this with someone the other day, that it was interesting to see who was around her at the end. And, you know, we weren't necessarily a group of, I don't know what way to call it. We were very normal people who were around her at the end. And it was really interesting to see that she'd had a really interesting professional life. But some of the people who were around her the most were just the most down to earth, nice people.
Yeah.
You know, and it was just great to observe that.
Mm-hmm. That's a very nice legacy.
Unassuming is the word, I think. Some of the people who were around her the most in that difficult, most profound time were some of the most unassuming people.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful.
Yeah. So thank you so much for sharing your... Yeah. Thanks, Catherine.
You'll never believe how topical the discussion has been for me today, because I have a friend and dear colleague who just sent me a message during this meeting.
Wow.
My dad passed about an hour ago. We were with him for his final breaths. His deterioration during the last few days was breathtakingly swift, surprising all involved. Thank goodness he waited for my arrival. We are now waiting for the hospice nurse to arrive and to say farewell to the caregiver. What's the best way for me to support my friend? What does he need from me right now?
I would just ask him that. I would just ask him, just say, what do you need? Is there anything I can do for you? Mm-hmm. Is there any details you need me to handle that you can hand off, phone calls to make, practical matters?
Mm-hmm.
And if you need to talk in the middle of the night, I'll leave my phone on, like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right.
Ask him.
Very pragmatic view.
Yes. Right.
There's nothing I can do, but I mean, right. I think I know that being there is the most important thing, and being a person who can sympathize and to stand by him.
Yep. But sometimes also people have to, especially if this sounds like it was a very sudden thing, there might be a lot of arrangements and organizing that can be done on the phone. Just simple practical things. Is there anything you have to do? Any details I can take care of for you?
Mm-hmm.
But like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's what I'm up to.
Yep. Well,
so.
Yeah.
So blessings to all of you, and I'll leave the floor to the rest of you.
Oh, it's so good to see you.
Good to see you too, Catherine.
Hi, Catherine.
Hi, dear.
Let's see. I was thinking, everything's going very well. I'm also in the Pacific Northwest and enjoying the bright, sunny, cloudless day, and bought a bunch of bulbs for my front yard. I have a naturescape, no lawn, but just plants and flowers. And I've always been a vegetable gardener. Now I'm more of a flower gardener, but that's new. And my business is almost wrapped up. I have another couple of months and it'll be done. And I'll be taking a long road trip back east. But I had an aha moment yesterday, which was I have these very close friends who we share a love of dogs. We do a lot of dog parks and just are in adoration of our furry friends. And we were talking, and one of my friends was talking about the differences that we had. You know, they're more theater people and art people, and I've always been more of a techno guy, science and electronics and things like that. And I came away thinking, well, you know, we actually have a lot more in common than we do different. And at first I was a little put off by, like, well, we're so different. What's the point of this? And then I realized, well, gee, we love film. We love our dogs. We love cooking. And there are just a lot more things to think about that we have in common. And it's a total, most of my life, my friends have been techno people like me. And now it's like, wow, I really enjoy this slight difference, but the commonality of, you know, a lot of affection for each other. And we get together probably at least once or twice a week. And it's like a whole new side of myself, a whole new side of life. And, you know, rather than focus on the differences, which there are, but the similarities are so rich and so so wonderful. So, yeah.
Yeah, and the similarities you've described are perhaps, one could say, of a more fundamental and long-lasting nature in terms of what actually matters in the end, and not just in the end, along the way. I've noticed in my life that certain types of relationships that I had when I was much younger were born of all kinds of interests that kind of fell away, that I outgrew. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that now the connection, I mean, it has to be predominantly a heart connection.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think that's exactly what I'm talking about. I mean, I revel in the richness of, I mean, my one friend's an actor. They were both former teachers, but he's acted throughout most of his life. And I go to all of his performances, and it's just like, well, I was never much into the theater, but now I'm starting to get it, you know? And same with art. And it's just opened up a whole new side of myself, and just acceptance of well, the differences are there, but the commonalities are much more evident, and reveling in them. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you're right about things dropping away. I mean, I guess I only was around technical and scientific people most of my life, and not that I only wanted to do that, but I just really wasn't aware of, well, I know there's these art people and I know there's these theater people, but I'm not part of it. And yet I've loved film, and, you know, that's always been my entree into that side. And so it's just waking up to that maybe more now in my later part of my life here. So, yeah.
Wow. So nice though. Great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You know, as you were speaking, I was thinking about the Jesus parable, the Good Samaritan. And I'm going to not do this justice. Maybe someone who's knows the story better than I, but here's my version. and it was something that I didn't realize for a long, long time until somebody explained what that actually was about. But apparently somebody had been, a guy had been attacked and left on the road. And this Good Samaritan came along and helped him and got him clothes and got him food and helped him. But what the piece of the story that I hadn't realized upon first hearing it was that in this guy's culture, the Samaritans were kind of untouchables. They were kind of a lower caste of sorts. So here he is being helped by, you know, someone who he might have just passed on the street and avoided or condemned in some way. And I think that that's such an incredible story, actually, to take into one's heart, that sometimes we have what might be called strange bedfellows in life. Now, your friends don't seem too far afield from you, just a few differences in artistic tastes and so on. But sometimes we find ourselves with people who we don't have very much in common at all, except that sort of sweetheartness, you know? Like, that might be the only thing, but that one's huge.
Yeah.
This has been In the Deep. Please visit our website at katherineingram.com to join our mailing list if you'd like to participate in a live Zoom session or be informed of other events. At our website, you may also make a donation, which is tax deductible for U.S. residents. And we welcome reviews on the podcast platform of your choice, or even just sharing this podcast with your friends. Till next time.